I, who grew up on welfare, wished for the knowledge of wealthy living. My dreams were grand indeed.
The Native Land Claims Act made me an instant millionaire. But this was on paper only. I didn't see no money. I didn't have a clear title to the land.
What is it we wanted? Why did we want it? I think we have to get back and step back and look at it and clear our eyes. We understand the American dream. We know what the American dream is. What's the Indian dream?
Alaska Natives are still hoping for many changes they wanted before Congress passed ANCSA, the Alaska Native Claim Settlement Act of 1971. Native peoples are now comparing their dreams with the realities to decide a course for the future. This is Holding Our Ground.
Funding for Holding Our Ground is provided by the Alaska Humanities Forum, the National Endowment for the Humanities, Rural Alaska Community Action Program, the North Slope Borough, and Zients Pertl Law Firm.
All the elderlies thought it was going to be the same way as it was before. I really was for it, because what I thought at that time, I thought we'll get the land we're trapped on and nobody will bother us. That's what I thought.
Charlie Titus of Minto had hopes for the 1971 Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, like natives in all parts of Alaska. After Alaska statehood in 1959, the new state began selecting lands in many areas. John Borbridge, one of the Native land claims leaders.
The natives were faced with a crisis which threatened the loss of more of their lands. Not just the loss of their lands, meaning those lands which they claimed. There had already been significant losses through selections by the state.
In 1966, Alaska Natives convinced the Secretary of Interior to freeze state land selections. A short time later, oil companies pushed for a Trans-Alaska oil pipeline.
Under those pressures and under a need to work within the congressional legislative system, the natives came together, set aside their differences, and sometimes took off the gloves in board meetings. And then after we got through battling on various points, went off to the Congress, presenting the facade of serenity and unity on all points.
State Senator Frank Ferguson remembered the land claims days in a statement read by Reggie Jewell.
The Native community, as I recall, was after a land settlement because the Native community saw land and the natural resources as their only way of survival. Since land is an economic commodity, which the state and federal government wasn't about to give up without a fight, a compromise was set. Some form of economic settlement with a smaller portion of land sought was the expedient complex solution.
Congress listened and acted and made a settlement in a businesslike manner. Doug Jones was an aide to Alaska Senator Mike Gravel.
Remember what we were trying to do. We were trying to extinguish a claim. And we devised the notion to do it with a combination of land and money. And the implication of that was that good things would subsequently happen, because good things generally do happen with abundant land and money. Now, the arguments for support for the legislation had to do with convincing senators and congressmen that this was a cost-effective way of attending to legitimate social and economic needs of Alaska Natives.
Native claims were settled quickly with relatively few people understanding what the outcome would mean. Native negotiators had not seen a complete copy of the bill when the Alaska Federation of Natives Association gathered in Anchorage in December of 1971. Walter McGannick of Port Graham was one of the 600 delegates to convention. They held an advisory vote on the Claims Act bill that President Nixon had already signed into law.
And a lot of questions asked at that meeting wasn't answered. It was very confusing meeting, and everybody wondered whether to accept it or not. We were in desperate position because they didn't give us enough time to explain to our people what we're getting into.
Many of the leaders back then thought that land claims would enhance the tribal government.
Don Standifera Tayunit.
And there was promises of land and money, and it was told to me personally. Why I voted for the land claims when I was 18 years old, told me that I'd receive a great amount of land and a great amount of money. No one ever did tell me that they was going to take the subsurface minerals like oil and gas and gravel and give it to another corporation called the Regional Corporation. Nobody told me that the Village Corporation would consist only of those people born before 1971, and that new people wouldn't participate thereafter. No one ever told me about the state of Alaska enacting their eminent domain powers, of which they had no jurisdiction previously. If all those things were brought to my attention, and if the tribe voted on, as we always vote on everything, you know, we usually get really knowledgeable before we take anything into consideration. I would never have voted for it.
Only the delegation from the Arctic Slope Native Association voted an emphatic no. People living in villages were never asked to comment on the final bill. Lillian Liaban of Akechuk.
I would like to ask you, who voted for ANCSA? Raise your hand if you, one of you voted for ANCSA bill. Raise your hand. I would like to see people that voted for ANCSA. Raise your hand. You see that? We the people of Alaska didn't vote for that ANCSA bill.
And see, and the land claims, in my opinion, was no more than a mechanism to build the Trans-Alaska Oil Pipeline. It was a mechanism to keep the oil revenue from going to just the native people. Right or wrong, that's the way it worked out. And that's what the whole thing was, and it was a way to get that pipeline corridor through. And the deal was cut, and we have to abide by it.
Former State Representative Jerry Ward.
And I went to all the native families, all the Indian families, and Eskimos and Aleuts in the Anchorage area, in the Matanuska Valley and Kenai, that I could find and help register them to whichever region that they were in. And I told people that this is good. You know, we're going to have ground, we're going to have land, we're going to have a place to build a home, we're going to have some money, we're going to have things that rightfully belong to the Alaska Natives. And we're not going to take nothing away from anybody. What we're doing is we're finally receiving what is already yours.
ANCSA conferred 44 million acres and about $1 billion to Alaska Natives. The land represented a small portion of traditionally used lands, about one-tenth of Alaska. Both land and money were divided among 12 regional corporations and more than 200 village corporations. Land was not given to native governments or individuals. Byron Malott, president of Sea Alaska Regional Corporation.
By that act, by the act of putting the land into the corporations, the land became an economic asset. Under law, under every other imaginable understanding of what it means to place an asset into a for-profit business corporation.
Instead of using and occupying land in a traditional sense, Alaska natives were forced to think of lands in Western terms of ownership.
And so immediately we were on a divergent course as to how that land could best be utilized and how best it could be maintained on behalf of Native people for the long-term future, because that's not what the land was for. The land was not viewed as an economic asset. It was viewed as the touchstone and the basis from which Native people could maintain their value systems and their cultures and all those things that have brought us to where we're at today.
Corporations own the land. Shareholders in the corporations cannot sell their shares until 1992, and unless the law is changed, corporations face takeover threats. They also face possible taxation and bankruptcy, the same as other corporations.
We have always been wealthy. It is only since land claims that our wealth has declined. The land we hold in trust is our wealth. It is the only wealth we could possibly pass on to our children.
Antoinette Hulmer from Craig. Lands traditionally used for subsistence living were very large and generally outside corporate boundaries. Doug Jones.
We probably misjudged the fierceness with which the Native community cared about the land portion of the settlement being as much as it could be, and not very substitutable for dollars as we maybe thought they might be.
Jackson is an attorney who helped write the land claims legislation.
It seemed to me at the time that the corporate structure was the closest thing under Western law to tribes, and that the tribes in Alaska, the villages in Alaska, had held the land essentially in common, not by individual ownership. And by utilizing the corporate form, we would be able to carry on that tradition, that system, and at the same time have all of the other advantages of a full body of law, which establishes the rights, duties, and responsibilities among the members of the corporation. One of the advantages I saw of the settlement was the vesting of large amounts of land and money in Native corporations, especially the regional corporations, would create a political power.
While the regional corporations have acquired a certain amount of political power, only half of them have more money than when they started. Village corporations have done poorly in general terms. Larry Merkulioff is president of the very successful Tanegusix Village Corporation of St. Paul Island.
Most thanks to corporations have had no major positive effect on their shareholders. This is not surprising considering the host of obstacles in their path. Little seed capital, lack of local business opportunities, lack of infrastructure adequate for business development in the community, lack of human resources trained and or experienced in the business arena, the leadership spread too thin by the numerous demands placed on them from inside the village and out, political pressures to invest in something despite odds of succeeding or risk, the biases of the business community, internal and external conflicts brought about by angst and ambiguities, and unrealistic shareholder expectations.
Village people tended to hope for jobs and a local economic base. There is little reason for many corporations to invest in rural Alaska, where the local cash economy is made up mainly by a store and a fuel station. Creditors are demanding lands pledged as collateral from both village and regional corporations. Lands Native peoples had hoped to save for many generations. Corporations are still looking for ways to save themselves and the land. They are taking steps to keep stock restricted and look into the potentials of land banks. Taxation and bankruptcy still remain as threats to them. John Borbridge is one of the first leaders of Sea Alaska Regional Corporation.
The clear intention of the Native framers of ANCSA was that the land of our forefathers would be preserved for all of us, including those who will come after for some while into the future. I think if we look for one entity that has a timeless quality, it's the tribal governing body. For a tribe to answer the question, where do we want to be in 50 or 100 years, is not all that big a question, because it's consistent with the existence of a tribe where there is no beginning and no end. Then it appears that the next logical consideration is to combine the timeless quality of the tribe with the land, resulting in a tribe that is land-based. I feel strongly that cultural identity and integrity and the land base are essential.
Tom Abel is Vice President of United Tribes of Alaska, a statewide organization encouraging development of tribal governments.
Basically, we have, I think, an action plan that's designed to work with our village corporations and regional corporations in such a manner that, you know, the benefits that accrue to both are going to be both real, substantial, and basically, we need the corporations in some aspects, and we can also demonstrate to them that there's a great deal of financial benefit available to all of us if we can present ourselves in such a manner that we're working in tandem rather than across purposes. And we don't intend to be taking over corporate business. However, we would like to develop a defined and controlled relationship with our corporations such that they are guaranteed of some measure of success rather than constantly being in a crisis management situation and constantly bleeding off assets to survive and continue your operations.
Gloria Stickman from Tazalina.
We can't really expect our corporation to take care of our cultures, keep our land. It's something we have to do as a people.
Alaskan natives have adapted many Western tools to their ways of living. Some people wonder if corporations are more than tools and question whether native cultures are changing to adapt to the corporation structure. Dennis Demert runs a native studies program at the University of Alaska.
The philosopher Ortega made the point that one thing that takes place over time is that we have some aspirations. We have some ideas for change. There are things that we want, and once we get them, those aspirations, as he says, change into appetites. And what is happening with us in this change? I don't know that we're standing outside of the situation adequately to see what we're doing, but I'm very fearful that the kind of aspirations that we're developing are for assimilation, whether we intellectually reject it or not. It's kind of an insidious sort of thing that's taking place. And I'm very fearful of Native people simply becoming brown white men.
You see a generation camps developing where there never used to be any. And language barriers developing between grandparents, parents, and grandchildren.
Ronald Brower of Barrel.
You'll find the eldest who may speak only Inupiaq. And on the other hand, their grandchildren speaking only English. So we are presently in the Arctic slope experiencing a very different form of a degeneration of our society, both physically, mentally, economically, spiritually, and culturally. The damage is evident. You just have to look at it.
Three Yupik villages in southwest Alaska have banded together to form the Yupik Nation. They have their own school district as a part of the state education system. They want to narrow the generation gaps. Willie Kasaili is president of the Native government in Akechak.
We're trying to involve the elders in our schools. We're also involving our elders as far as survival skills, and going out to the tundra, have them show the students how to set traps or even shelters in cases of emergency. And I guess the other aspect would be to look for places from, like subsistence game, like the fish in the lakes, where to go, how to set traps and whatnot.
The traditions are recognized with increasing importance as necessary to deal with the future.
We are still here, still fighting for what we believe in, still a proud people, with a deep culture, still intact, despite what was done to us.
The Aleuts living on the Pribilof Islands were originally enslaved there by Russian fur traders. The system was perpetuated by the United States. Larry Merkulioff.
Through what may be called the conflict model of education, we've developed an attitude that if we must survive in a mainstream society, we can only do it by learning its rules, its language, its systems, its institutions, as well as the best of those from that society. But at all costs, protect our rights to the land and the culture and lifestyle we have chosen to evolve.
Claire Swan of the Kanaitse tribe.
We certainly cannot return to the past, but we are what the past has made us. We've brought it with us. One of the most important things is to find out what a tribe is. We were here first. We were here 3,000 years ago. And ANCSA was written because we are here, because the tribal people were here. It is not the other way around.
We had some very great hope.
Ronald Brower.
In that we would be living a better life as a result of ANCSA, and that we would be reaping some of the benefits. That has not been the case.
Harvey Samuelson of Dillingham.
Really, this native land claims was a landmark deal because it gave our people recognition, the right to their land. A lot of people say native land claim was no good and everything else, these Monday morning quarterbacks. But damn it, it was the first right we got to our lands and gave us some identity.
Roy Ewan.
As far as the overall land claims, I see a prouder Native people than we did, say, before 1971. They know that they have something.
I think Native people, I think one of the greatest attributes of the Act...
Perry Eaton.
...is that we can stand up as Native people today and deal with Native problems as Natives. And that was not true on Kodiak Island 15 years ago. In many cases of the state, it has been the rebirth of the people. I have faith in the people. I think that we will deal with the problems. And because of the renewed vigor and the renewed identity and the pride that we have today that we did not have 15 years ago, I think that we will overcome the problems.
Native people have created, and the Claim Settlement Act has created the opportunity for us to destroy ourselves.
Byron Malott.
By having us use our own institutions and fight with our own people without looking outside to where some of the real obligations for our circumstance and for our future lives. The Claim Settlement Act was basically a land settlement. It became much more than that, certainly. But that's what it really was all about at that time. And what has happened is that many Native people have transferred all of their hopes and all of their aspirations and all of their frustration and all of the anger to ANCSA. We wanted institutions that we would control, and we wanted to control our own destiny. And that ANCSA was a way to do that. Well, doggone it, ANCSA isn't the way to do that. ANCSA can do certain things, but it can't do everything.
Claire Swan.
And maybe the only significant benefit that any of us are going to get out of it is that it caused us, as Native people, to think about who we are and where we are, what we're doing. But the identity is the important thing.
Willard Jones of Kassan.
So if the intent of the act was to have the Indians fit into the mainstream or the acculturation, or whatever terminology you may want to it, so that we can become a self-sufficient people, has not happened yet. for our dreams, I guess it'd be called a great American dream. That is still something we're looking for.
Larry Merculia.
An Eliot story comes to mind at this point. There was a 200-year-old man named Cuyach. Cuyach lived in a band which became a village, which became a city. Before, his leaders were elders in the councils, and now they are IRA presidents, city mayors, and corporate presidents. Before, land was used for communal benefit, owned by no one, and now it is in lots and blocks owned by individuals. Before, his home was made of the free earth with energy from the earth, and now he must make money to keep the house habitable and apply under some law or with some expense for land to build a home. Before, all his food came from hunting, fishing, and gathering, and now some or most of it comes in wrappers filled with chemicals which he must buy. A little boy asked Cuyach what he must do to control his future. And Cuyach replied, "This world is not of our people's making, but it is not too late. White man's words have as many meanings as there are seals in the world's oceans. Study it and choose the road you wish to take, or it will never be of your own making. Do not reject the other worlds. Take the best from it and mold it into yours. And above all, do not follow your mind. Let your mind follow your heart. Your heart contains your people's spirit and courage of generations. Your mind is what you learn today. Do not give up, for with every problem there is a solution."
Robert Mullock of Kotzebue.
We always have to try to determine our future. Otherwise, we'll get too caught up in one simple thing, or one matter, or one problem. We got to look at it from all angles. So this is what we got to do, is we got to look beyond the horizon.
Edgar Ningaluk of Shishmaref wrote,
"We are the only one who can save ourselves. We keep looking to the outside world for someone to come and do it, and it's not going to happen. We are expecting someone out there to save us, and in fact, there's nothing in the outside world that is really that important. I think our people ought to understand that it is possible to maintain their identity and their spirit and their language and their tradition and their history and their values, and still function in the 21st century.
For Holding Our Ground, this is Adeline Raboff. This program was produced by Jim Sykes, written by Mary Kantsiewicz and Sue Burris. Edited by Sue Burris and researched by Frankie Burris. Special thanks to the community of Gambell for dancing, singing, and drumming. Also thanks to the Inuit Circumpolar Conference and Alaska Native Foundation. Edgar Ningaluk's written remarks were read by Charles Oxrock. For more information about this and other programs in this series, write to Western Media Concepts, P.O. Box 215, Anchorage, Alaska 99510. Holding Our Ground is a production of Western Media Concepts, which is solely responsible for the content.
Funding for Holding Our Ground is provided by the Alaska Humanities Forum, the National Endowment for the Humanities, Rural Alaska Community Action Program, the North Slope Borough, and Zients Pertl Law Firm.